WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you. Right now. Wherever and whenever that now happens to be. The Healthy Planet radio show focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. The topic of this evening's show is food waste. But it's not food waste on the grand scale. We're going to be talking about what happens in our homes. And what happens in our homes is important, as is what happens throughout our food production and consumption system. According to Feeding America, America has more than enough food for everyone to eat. But each year, billions of pounds of perfectly good food go to waste. Meanwhile, 34 million face hunger in the United States. What is food waste? Food waste is safe, high-quality food that's thrown away rather than eaten. So how much food waste is there in the United States? Each year, 119 billion pounds of food is wasted in the U.S. alone. That equates to 130 billion meals and more than $408 billion in food thrown away each year. Shockingly, nearly 40% of all food in America is wasted. Food goes to waste at every stage of food production and distribution. Food waste in our homes, which is what we're going to be focusing on this evening, makes up about 39% of all food waste, about 42 billion pounds of food waste. And I'll add something to this conversation that you don't always find on the food waste websites. But it's something that should always be discussed when we are talking about food waste in our world. And that is that, according to a study published in the journal Science by lead researcher Joseph Poor at the University of Oxford in the UK, in what was the largest analysis to date that looked at our food and the impact it has on the environment, meat and dairy production uses the vast majority, 83% of our farmland, and yet it provides just 18% of our population's calories. That fact bears repeating. 83% of the world's farmland is used to create just 18% of our calories. And that's because we're feeding food to animals instead of people. And if we were to feed that food directly to people, we could feed a whole lot more people. Because every time you feed food to an animal, and then another animal eats that animal to gain their nutrition, you're losing 90% of the calories. 100% of the fiber, more than 90% of the protein, gone. So that's just a footnote. But what we're talking about tonight, again, is food waste at home. But we're not talking about the problem. We're talking about the solution, or a solution. And that solution comes in the form of composting. That's right, using food that we waste, food that we haven't used, that we cut away, that we forget about, using that not just to reduce the waste that goes into our landfills, but also to increase the quality of the soil that we use to grow things in our home. And I'm very happy to be delving into this topic with someone who has a lot of experience in not only teaching people to compost, but building compost structures for people at their homes so that they can be part of the solution, even if they're not up to building the structure themselves. And our expert's name is Dylan Licopoli, and he is from an organization called the Home Organic Gardening Service, or HOGS is the acronym. And that's a family business dedicated to planting seeds of all kinds, literal and metaphorical. In addition to practical installation and maintenance of organic vegetables and systems, HOGS is committed to educating and celebrating a community of mindful gardeners on Long Island. Dylan Licopoli, thank you for joining us on The Healthy Planet.
Thank you for having me.
Dylan, give us a bit of insight into what your business, Home Organic Gardening Service, or HOGS, Home Organic Gardening Service, does, the spirit behind it, and how it got started.
Okay, great. Short answer is we design, build, plan, plant, and maintain organic vegetable gardens for our clients at their homes. We also do a lot of fruit tree planting, berry bushes, composting systems, as it were, irrigation systems, season extenders, hoop houses, greenhouses, and other sustainable systems. We've been doing this for about 13 years. We roughly began around 2010 when my wife, who was not my wife at the time, but we were just entering a relationship, and at the time she was practicing vegetarian, and we decided that we were going to do a CSA, community supported agriculture, mm-hmm. Which is a fantastic thing, and I recommend it to everyone. The particular CSA that we did gave us a lot of stuff, and we were a couple of two people, and we actually shared our single share with another couple, and we just ended up with so much stuff that we didn't really know how to use. Knowing what I know now, I would say that that's not an excuse to not do a CSA, that in reality, you should simply learn how to use those things that you do not currently know how to use. But
right.
At the time, we were capricious, so we decided we would start our own vegetable garden. But where we were living at the time had very little sun. So I said to one of my very good friends, who had a very sunny front yard, how about I put a vegetable garden in at your house, and I will take care of it, and we will share the bounty, share the produce. And he and his wife thought that was a brilliant idea. And then several other friends heard about it, and they thought it would be a brilliant idea. So at that point in time, I decided that I would parlay my previous experience in the landscaping industry into a more specialized organic vegetable garden company. And in the first couple years, we got a lot of press. Apparently, there was in some communities, they frown upon vegetable gardens in the front yard. So Newsday and News 12 Long Island heard about these vegetable gardens going up, as it was in a couple of front yards, and wanted to find out if anybody was up in arms about it, if the community was accepting or not accepting. As it was, everybody in the neighborhood loved the gardens. But anyway, that was the beginning of Home Organic Gardening Service. And then News 12, actually, they were running a series on green living, and I had just done a number of composting systems. So they actually did, you know, a 30-minute piece on composting that featured interviews with Home Organic Gardening Service, and, you know, showed some of the projects that we had recently completed.
Fantastic. And for those people who don't know, CSA is Community Supported Agriculture, which is where a local farm creates all kinds of produce, and it gets brought to a location where you, as a CSA member, go to pick it up, and you enjoy the different, whatever they give you. It's all random according to what they have been growing that week. They yep. give you what you get, and then you enjoy it for the week, and you get it every week usually.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. During the growing season. Yep. Absolutely.
Right. All right. So let's move into our topic, which is suburban composting. Mm. Let's start with square one and explain to our listeners what composting is.
Okay. So in its purest form, composting is just stuff that rots, really. Basically, everything composts, right? I mean, everything breaks down in the end. And composting specifically is generally organic material that the process of microorganisms and macroorganisms literally feeding on that organic material and then converting it into its more base forms is what composting is, right? So everything, we say everything composts, and that's true. Mattresses, tires, everything. But for us, for suburban composting, we're really looking at organic vegetable matter. There's lots of different forms of composting. two general categories of composting that we generally see are aerobic composting and anaerobic composting. Anaerobic composting is without the presence of oxygen, and aerobic composting is with the presence of oxygen. And it has a totally different set of organisms which work within those two different systems.
So for the purposes of talking about suburban composting, we're talking about using what? Kitchen wastes, yard wastes, into creating organic matter.
Exactly right. Yep. And when we say kitchen wastes, we're really focusing on raw, unprocessed vegetable matter. Right. The truth is that, yes, everything will compost, but if you want to really nourish the aerobic organisms, which do the most effective composting work within a suburban environment, then we're sticking with broccoli stalks, the greens from strawberries, you know, really uncooked, unprocessed vegetable matter. You wouldn't put cereal in, you wouldn't put butter in, you wouldn't put anything that's been cooked or processed or seasoned. I mean, you could, but it's not a good idea. To maintain a real healthy system and have it thrive, you want to stick with organic, unprocessed vegetable matter, uncooked. And you basically want to work at a ratio of 3-to-1 nitrogens to carbons. And the easy way to remember that is nitrogens are your raw kitchen waste, your broccoli stems, your strawberries, your banana peels. That's your nitrogen. Your carbon is your dried leaves, your dried grass clippings. Other things that can act as carbon sources, which especially now, since we are seeing such a dramatic uptick in delivery services, cardboard boxes are awesome as a carbon source. And when I say 3-to-1, it means 3 carbons by volume to each 1 nitrogen. So I like to think of it as if you've got a small handful of kitchen waste and a big heaping handful of carbons into the mix.
Right. Okay. And then once you create this compost, what are some of the ways it can be used?
Well, definitely it goes right back into the vegetable garden. Hopefully it can be used as a top dressing around plants. It can be used. It depends really on how much you have. You know, so a typical home system isn't going to generate, you know, tens of yards worth of organic, you know, usable compost. You know, generally, if you're using a 3-bin composting system, which is what I recommend to use, each bin is 3 feet wide by 3 feet deep by 3 feet high, which forms 1 cubic yard. And that's really the standard for the size of a compost bin that you'll want to use. And my rule of thumb is that if you are a productive composter, you should be able to add enough raw materials to a single bin in a 1-month period of time that you would then have it full enough, you know, let's say 2/3 or 3/4 of the way up to the top, that you would then the next month move on to the next bin and stop adding to the first bin.
Oh,
and utilize the second, you know, your middle, let's call it your middle bin if they're in a row, for a month. And then the third month, you move to your third bin. And then by the fourth month, that first bin should be ready to empty out and put in your curing pile where it sits for about a month, just in the sun, just drying. And that's what really, we say that's what finishes it into usable compost that you can then introduce into your, you know, your potted plants, your vegetable gardens, around your trees, your flowers, whatever it is that you want to do with it.
Right. So what people would normally think of is to use this compost. It's very rich soil to help their garden grow better. And so better soil equals better produce.
Absolutely. They call it black gold for a reason.
Yeah.
That it really is. You know, we have a joke that no matter what the problem is with your soil, the answer is add compost. If your soil is too has too much clay, you add compost. If it's too sandy, you add compost. No matter what the nutrient imbalance is, shy of bringing in a PhD in soil sciences, the quick answer is add compost. And in just about every situation, you will be doing yourself a favor and you will be improving the quality of whatever soil it is that you're attempting to grow in.
And of course, if you're making your own compost, you're also saving money because you're not buying it.
Absolutely. And you're doing so many things, really.
Yeah. Talk about some of the other benefits.
Yeah, sure.
Global and local.
I mean, if you just think about it, the amount of garbage that we throw away and that ends up in plastic bags and landfills is, just insane to think about, right? So the more things that we can do to mitigate and reduce the amount of volume of material that we send to landfills, the better for our environment, for climate change, for, pretty much for everything. So if we can, say take 30% of what it is that we would be, if we're not composting, 30% of what we're putting in plastic bags and sending off to who knows where, and we can take that and use it for something that is incredibly beneficial, it's really a win-win on so many levels.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Yeah.
And also you don't have smelly garbage anymore.
That's true. Absolutely true. That's a great segue. Going back to suburban composting, is one of the fears that you have people articulating is that they're worried that it's going to smell. But the reality is that if you have a healthy, well-maintained composting system, there are no foul odors at all. And by a healthy, well-maintained composting system, it doesn't come for free. It doesn't come with nothing. It is a little bit of work. So the system that I described before, the 3-bin composting system, you have to turn that compost a couple of times a week. And that's really it's a weekly chore. It really becomes part of your routine, right? You're adding your organic waste material to the bin. You're adding your leaf material, or you're ripping up your cardboard boxes. Or another way to do it is, if you've got tons of cardboard boxes from your Amazon deliveries, is to put them outside and spray them down with a hose so they get really wet. Then they're very easy to rip up and introduce into your composting system. I like to think about it as akin to chewing. The smaller the particle size that you add to your composting system, the faster it gets processed. The more surface area it has for the microorganisms and macroorganisms to work on it, and the faster your compost will go through its cycle to completed, ready-to-use organic material for your garden. And the idea of turning it is basically it's a pitchfork that you go out and literally, turn over the material that's in that bin a couple of times a week. And you're going to do that throughout the entire composting process to any bin that has material in it. So after your first month, where you stop adding to that first bin and you start adding to your second bin, you don't stop turning the first bin. You just stop adding to it. And I mean, that's really important, really. And that's one of the pitfalls, the traps that people fall into when they're composting, is they only make one compost pile. You have to stop adding to it. Otherwise, you're never going to have a finished product.
Right.
So you have to stop and let it do its thing. And it goes through different phases. I don't know specifically the insects and the microorganisms by name that work on processing that material. But, the first week, you've got a totally different set of organisms working on processing your compost than the fifth week in. So it really evolves and it transitions and it becomes a real ecosystem of its own.
Right. You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'm speaking with Dylan Licopoli of the Home Organic Gardening Service, or HOGS, located in Northport, New York. And the important but dirty business we're talking about today is the business of creating really good dirt, otherwise known as compost, at your home. You can find out more about Dylan at www.homeorganicgardeningservice.com. or even easier to remember, www.hogsinc.com. That's HOGSINC.com. So Dylan, you were mentioning about other ways of composting that you don't think are as good. Go into a couple of those. Talk about the pros and cons of them.
Okay, so we've been talking pretty much about aerobic, three-bin composting systems, which in my experience has proven to be the most effective, especially for suburban locations. An anaerobic compost system is one that you're not using, it's not aerobic bacteria and aerobic microorganisms that are doing the composting work, it's anaerobic, and they tend to be pretty smelly.
That's what happens in your sewage lines.
That's what happens in your sewage lines. Yep, absolutely. It's what happens when you just leave a garbage pail with organic material in it and the lid on. After a period of time, you open it up and, you know, it basically knocks you over, the smell. But there are anaerobic composting systems, which could be anything as simple as a hole in the ground that you throw your organic waste materials in, which is fine. It takes a very long time. If you were going to do that kind of composting, you're looking at a year or more before that material becomes ready to then dig up and use. And a system like that, because it does become so pungent, really will attract wildlife, possibly unwanted wildlife, depending on your circumstances. Yeah, so I don't recommend that for a suburban home composting system.
Right.
We had mentioned tumblers briefly, which can be effective composting systems. They are not my preference for a couple of the reasons that we really mentioned already, not the least of which is if history can be trusted, they often become anaerobic composting systems because, one, people often only get one, and they become very heavy when you start to add a lot of material in there. So when it's very light and you can spin it very easily and you spin them, you know, regularly, it can work. But unless you have three of them and you follow the stop adding to one until it's finished rule, then you fall into that trap now of never really having finished compost. A couple of the other problems with those is that the only microorganisms and macroorganisms that go in are what you put in. Whereas a three-bin composting system, aerobic composting system that's on, you know, that's on the ground, a week, 2 weeks in, there's 1,000 worms in there that were not in there that you did not put in there yourself. Mm. They just, you know, it's the old, if you build it, they will come. and, you know, that in and of itself is improving not just the compost that's inside the bin, but also the area around the bin, because those worms are aerating the soil on their way from wherever they were to when they arrive at your composting bin. So the tumbler systems, they don't have that advantage, right? The only things in there are what you put in there. So they will work, but in my experience, they take much, much, much longer. And unless you have three of them or more, it becomes a never-ending battle of how come I don't have finished compost? You know, what's happening here? How come this isn't working? And as I said before, as they fill, they can become very heavy. And often the frame that they're on or the wheels that they rest on in order to allow you to tumble them breaks down. And you know, they don't really hold up over a particularly long period of time, in my experience.
All right. So let's stay with the three bin then. Since that's what we're going to be talking about and that's what you're going to be describing, because what we want to do now is give people information about how they actually go about starting a composting operation at their homes.
Sure.
And then maintaining it. But we could start with starting.
Okay.
And so for those of you at home who are listening to this, get out your keyboard or your pen and paper, because if you're excited about doing composting, which I know I love it, I would never not compost, even though I haven't been doing it by the book and I'm learning a lot today. For those of you who are ready to do it, be ready to record what's going on. So let's start at the beginning. First, is composting right for everyone? And that is, how do people determine whether they have what they need, be it the type of kitchen or the type of yard, the type of space, in order to do the type of composting you recommend?
Okay, so much of it has to do with your size of your household and what it is that you eat, right? So if you are a family that eats vegetables every day and fruits every day, and you've got, you know, a couple of adults and a couple of kids, or, you know, if, you know, three, four, five people in your household, and that's the type of diet that you maintain, then you're absolutely, you've got the raw materials
check
there. Okay. All right. Now the next thing would be you've got the nitrogens, right? You've got access to the nitrogens. Now the question is, do you have access to the carbons? And, you know, that's kind of pretty much a no-brainer. I mean, if you've got an Amazon account and you get things delivered, or if you have any trees at all on your property, or you have any type of a lawn that gets mowed, or you have access to, you know, newspapers any which way, then you've got your carbon source or sources pretty much nailed down. You know, for that matter, you can also use straw from a nursery. You can get bales of straw from the nursery. So any of that type of stuff works well as your carbon base. So if you've got your raw materials, the next thing you need is space, right? So if you're going to build a 3-bin composting system and you're going to use the 3x3x3 rule of thumb so that each of your 3 bins is 1 cubic yard. For anybody that doesn't know, a cubic yard is 27 cubic feet. So if your compost bin is 3 feet wide by 3 feet deep and 3 feet high, 3 times 3 times 3, 27 cubic feet. Now you're going to put 3 of those next to each other, or you can just build 1 continuous unit that has separations at 3-foot intervals. So you're going to need 9 feet long by 3 feet deep and 3 feet high. Now, in practice, the 3 feet deep thing is good, but if you really want to be able to get in there and turn the compost and have it accumulate in height, you really should make it maybe 4 or 5 feet deep, long, that is, you know, from the back to the front, so that you can really roll the compost out towards yourself and then pile it back in again as you're going through your turning regimen. And then ideally, you're also going to have a bin, a fourth, which doesn't necessarily have to be an enclosed bin, but you have to have room for your curing pile. So when the material comes out of the compost bin after it's 3 months of being in and being turned, now it just needs to sit in a pile, and it's called curing. The compost has to cure, and that's the real finishing touch on making it into the type of a product that you would imagine that you would buy, like the type of bag, you know, it will look very similar to the bagged compost product or bulk compost product that you would get at your local nursery. It will be far superior to that product because those bagged products are basically leaf and yard debris that goes into those products. So you don't have the benefit of the, you know, wide ranging variety of materials that we would use as, you know, home compost producers. You know, they don't have any broccoli in them. They don't have apple cores. They don't have any of that stuff in the compost that you buy bagged. And also bagged compost, you know, it has been enclosed. It has been without oxygen in that bag for a long period of time. So the way that I think about it is compost that you make fresh at your house is alive. It's got living microorganisms in it that are beneficial to your soil, to your plants that you want to use it to support. Compost that you buy in a bag, it is great. It's got the nutrients, but it doesn't necessarily have the vigor of a healthy biosystem, you know, existing within that bag. So we think of it as dead compost.
Right.
So now we've got 12 feet long by 5 feet deep and 3 feet high. So you need that much room.
You need a bunch of room.
You need a bunch of vegetables.
You need the diet.
Yep. And then you're going to need your building materials. What are you going to make it out of? You can be very creative. You can make composting bins out of anything. You can use old pallets that you could basically get for free at, you know, a local nursery or Home Depot or a place like that. You could use really high-end hard lumber like a locust or something like that. It costs a lot of money, but it will last a really long time. or you can use my building material of choice is cedar, because cedar has natural resistances to rotting, which is why it's often used for like deck material and things like that, because it lasts a long time outside in the elements. So you're going to build your frame. You're going to construct your frame with, you know, posts on the corners and at 3-foot intervals along the back wall and along the 5-foot length. And then you're going to use, there's lots of different ways that you can go about doing it, depending on what your budget is and what you have access to. You can just use cedar planks. You can use cheap, you know, you can use pine 2x4s that, you know, yeah, maybe they're going to rot out in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But at that point, maybe you just make another one and you use those in your compost pile. You use that wood in your compost pile, or you use that wood to make a hugel garden. There's all sorts of different things, the ways that you can continue with the sustainable mindset on really trying to use everything that you're purchasing to go into this system. One of the things that I like to do is I like to use posts to make the frame, and then hardware cloth to make the sides and back. And hardware cloth is sort of like it's a heavy duty mesh product that's, you can almost think of it as like a heavy duty chicken wire kind of a fencing material, but it's much heavier, it's much thicker, and it's got a much smaller grid within the lattice framework of the material. And it comes in 3-foot heights in rolls of just about any length you would want to buy. And it's very heavy duty, and it doesn't really break down. It will last a very long time in an outside system. So that's another really good way to go. And it breathes. So it also forms the walls.
So the posts are in the ground, and that cloth, you called it cloth, right?
It's cloth. It's metal, but it's called hardware cloth. Yeah.
That forms the walls.
That forms the walls. Exactly right. So you would build a frame with the top, you know, 4 posts within, you know, top of a piece of wood going across the top, piece of wood going around across the bottom, horizontal pieces of wood, and then vertical pieces of wood, which would be the posts. And then you can literally just staple or screw hardware cloth onto that framework to form the walls of your composting system.
Okay. So then you have to get in and out of the compost, or is it open in the front?
It's open in the front. Yep. In its basic form, it's just open. Some people will take pieces of tarp, you know, to sort of cover each individual bin, but it's really not necessary. You certainly can go the extra yard and put like a removable front panel in the composting system. You could go the extra distance and put a lid on top, a hinged lid that opens and closes. It can be made out of that same material, a wood frame with a hardware cloth, you know, roof section, I guess you would call it. Same thing with the front panel. You can make a panel that just slides in and out of slots on the side that you lift out when you're ready to go in and do your turning. And then you put it back in place when you're done. Doing something like that is, if you've got that fear that there are going to be animals or something like that going in there, then you might want to use that kind of a more enclosed system. As long as it breathes and has, you know, air, access for air to transfer through, you're going to be fine either which way. Most of the aeration process happens when you turn it, not necessarily through whatever structure it is that you're using to contain your materials. You know, that being said, it is nice to use hardware cloth because it does breathe, but that's not a game. It's not going to make or break the system, in my experience.
And by the way, let's throw in at this time that if you are on Long Island and you want help with this, there is someone that does help with this, right? And his name is?
Are we talking about me?
That's you.
Yeah. I'm happy to help. I love actually building composting systems. And also, so it's not, there is me. Yep, that is true. I'm happy to do that kind of project. Also, your local cooperative extension office is they absolutely love composting. Cornell Cooperative Extension, ccesuffolk.org. There is a Nassau County division as well. Their website is an absolute wealth of information about home gardening, composting, vermiculture systems, tree maintenance, fruit trees, basically anything you can think of that has to do with gardening or even lawn maintenance, turf grass maintenance, even houseplants, you can find at Cornell Cooperative Extension, which again is www.ccesuffolk.org, Cornell Cooperative Extension Suffolk.org. And they are a wealth of information on their website. They also have volunteers who man the phones and are happy to help you out or direct you for whatever information it is that you need in order to be a productive, sustainable gardener, composter, canner, what have you.
All right. And once again, this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. And I'm speaking with Dylan Licopoli of the Home Organic Gardening Service, or HOGS, located in Northport, New York. That's HOGS Inc., HOGSinc.com. HOGSinc.com. So people have their containers, and now they're ready to compost.
Well, I wanted to add, because since we are talking about materials, it doesn't have to be wood and hardware cloth or wood at all. We sometimes make them out of cinder block. We sometimes make them out of poured concrete. Again, you can use pallets. You can really just use pretty much anything that you can think of that will create those three areas of space that you can then use to hold your raw materials and then your finished compost product. And then while we're talking about systems, just real quick, one of the other things that that is kind of a really cool thing that people are starting to do more now than they have in the past is if the idea of getting out there with a pitchfork and turning your compost system is something that doesn't particularly appeal to you, either because you've got a bad back or you just don't have the time or it's just not your thing, we can make what's called an aerated compost system, which actually is a system that works on a timer and actually blows forced air into the center of each of these compost bins on a regular basis, which there is still a little bit of work. You still have to put your stuff in. You still have to take, you know, the compost out when it's finished, but it really does go a long way towards reducing the amount of back work that you have to put in order to get that oxygen into that system. I don't want to get too technical, but, you know, an active composting system reaches temperatures of 160, 170, sometimes even 180 degrees in there. And that's because of the chemical, the reactions that are happening with those aerobic bacteria. And it's just like using a bellows to fan a fire, adding oxygen into that system really fuels that reaction, which is why you're turning your compost on a regular basis so that you're introducing that oxygen into that reaction. And, you know, some people, if you're precise and deliberate about it, use a compost thermometer, which is a thermometer with a 3-foot long probe that goes in there. And you can use that to monitor and say, am I turning this enough? Am I turning it too much? The 2 to 3 times a week is a basic rule of thumb. And in my experience, that has been effective. But you certainly could get much more precise about it if you wanted to. And basically, if your compost system never reaches 160 degrees, then it's not really hot enough. If it gets up over 180 degrees, then it's really too hot. So those are some general guidelines that you can use to know if you're doing it right, I guess.
Okay.
Or if you're doing it in such a way that it will follow the 30-day, you know, the 90-day finished compost formula.
Got it. All right. So people have their bins. They've created their bins and they're ready to go.
Yeah.
They have their dinner wastes. Yes. What happens?
Basically, there's lots of different ways you can do it. What I do is I have a compost bucket in the house that I take. If it's already dinner waste, it's very likely that is not what's going into your composting system.
Because dinner prep wastes.
Your dinner prep waste. Thank you. Right. Good call. Yeah.
Okay.
Your dinner prep waste just goes into a bucket on the counter. They have composting buckets that are kind of decorative and they're like nice looking and they're silver. And essentially it's got a top that seals on it. That's got a filter over the air openings. And that stops like any fruit flies or anything like that from taking residence in there. And you fill that thing up once a day, twice a day, however often you fill it up. And then you bring it out to your compost pile and you dump it in. You take your couple handfuls of carbon to go in with it. Maybe you take that opportunity to take your pitchfork out and give that thing a turn. And then you go back inside and finish your dinner. Yeah, it's as simple as that. Really is as simple as that. If it's a process that you incorporate into your lifestyle, then you don't even give it a second thought. There was a while when I was doing what I like to think of as extreme composting, where I wanted to generate a lot of compost. So I would actually go to the local market that was making vegetable juices, the processed using a juicer to make vegetable juices. They don't know what to do with all that pulp. It just goes into garbage cans or garbage bags.
Good stuff.
So you go down and you collect that material. At least I went down and I collected that material from Organically Yours in Northport on Main Street in Northport. And Allison would give me buckets. I mean, literally, 5, 6, 7, 8 5-gallon pails every day.
Wow.
Or, large, 50-gallon garbage pails a couple times a week. That was the processed pulp from her juices, which are awesome, by the way. And I would take that back to my house and I'd introduce it into my compost system. And I generated at that point in time just vast quantities of compost.
That's valuable goods there.
It absolutely is. If you've got the wherewithal and the room and the time, another thing you could do is go to your local brewery, have a couple of beers, and ask them what they do with their spent grains that goes into the brewing process. And I will guarantee you that they have buckets and buckets and buckets of that material that they would love to find a good home for in somebody's active composting system.
Mm. It's great. Reusing the wastes.
Reusing all of that material and that kind of stuff, going back to what we were saying at the beginning, that's pre-chewed. That stuff is pre-chewed. So you introduce that into a composting system and it really fires that process up. And you can really get a very fast, very vigorous composting experience using that kind of material. But we're digressing a bit from what an average household would do in their home.
Right.
So basically you're taking the material, the chopped up prep. And when I say raw, uncooked kitchen waste, you can also use coffee grinds. You can use eggshells. They don't recommend using too much citrus, like orange skins and things like that. But if you've got a healthy composting system, throwing in a bunch of orange peels is not gonna hurt anything. I wouldn't just do orange peels. I wouldn't have a composting system that was just orange peels or just eggs. But having a diverse variety of material that goes into that system really ensures that you're going to have a pretty healthy, pretty vigorous reaction happening there.
Great. And of course, by doing this, to reiterate, you're causing a lot of good. You're keeping that food from going into the waste stream, which creates methane, which is a very potent climate change gas.
Yep.
You're saving money. You're growing better vegetables or plants. You don't have a smelly garbage and all that garbage to throw away. So there is some effort into creating the compost, but there's also savings in other areas.
Absolutely. We say that having your own compost system and having your own organic vegetable garden, I think it's Wendell Berry, the poet and essayist, that says you are in very, very real ways contributing to the health of our planet. And it's just about the best thing that you can do to help out Earth at this point in time.
Yeah. And fortunately, I'm really happy to say that things have really changed in the world of composting. I know back in the 60s and 70s, it was relegated to the hippies. It was a fringe activity.
Yep.
And people didn't really think about doing it in their homes in suburbia. But we don't need to look really that far to see that things have really changed. And in June of this year, the Zero Waste Act was passed in New York City. And the city council passed that in order to make New York a more sustainable, greener city. Yep. And part of that calls for the mandatory composting and separating of organic waste for all households and businesses by next year.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal. And in fact, it will be the largest composting program on the planet.
Yeah.
And of course, New York City is Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, and he's looking to achieve zero waste in New York City by 2030. And I'll mention proudly that we did a full show interview with the then Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams, before he announced his running for mayor a couple of years ago. And he's a firm supporter of a Whole Foods plant-based diet. And he has really reaped the benefits health-wise of moving from a standard American diet to that Whole Foods plant-based diet. So we've got a really thoughtful man running New York City. And that's one of the positives of these last few years.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Boston also has mandatory composting, or they had a program, you know, working towards mandatory composting for all homes and businesses. And I believe that Montreal also. So you're seeing that, it's glorious that New York City is really taking a leadership position in that, because it is, you know, it really is just such a critical step towards a sustainable future. But there are, you know, other cities as well. So it's not isolated. Like what you're saying is very accurate. It's sort of a wholesale movement looking in that direction.
Yeah.
Which it's just, you can't say enough about how important that is in our current climate.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, for a while, I think Montreal was giving the tumbling systems for free to every household to support that composting initiative. Again, I don't know if they were giving lessons on how to use them correctly, but you know, the thought was there. The idea was there, and it's a great thing.
Yeah. New York City will be giving bins that they will collect.
Because New York City is going to set up their own centralized composting system, right?
I don't know exactly the answer to that, but I do know that some will be going to Staten Island and various other locations, and they're going to reassess where this material goes as the program continues.
Yeah.
They have a plan.
They have a plan, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about, you know, what to do with your kitchen waste when you have it. You know, there also are these countertop composters.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that.
You know, it's a great idea. And the ones that I've seen have not been particularly effective. Mm. Essentially, it's just a heating unit that heats what you put inside it. And the idea is that that's going to mimic the heat of a natural composting reaction.
Right.
But it doesn't really work, in my opinion.
Too bad.
If you have that $300 of disposable income, I would put it towards building materials for a regular conventional composting system, as opposed to purchasing the countertop one, or at least the ones that I've seen thus far. It certainly is a technology that has, you know, potential. In my experience, it hasn't quite gotten there yet.
Okay. Are there any other resources that people listening to this show could tap into to find out more? You had mentioned Cooperative Extension.
Yep.
Anything else you'd recommend?
I would say any organic gardening center is a great place to sort of look into that sort of thing. Vermiculture systems are also, you know, worm composting is also a very popular type of composting system. Not so much, you don't see it so much for homes, but it's a great school project to do with your kids. Basically, you're taking like a large plastic tote. You're putting some holes in it. You're inserting it into another plastic tote with wet newspapers. And you have to either buy or collect red wiggler worms, which are the worm of choice for vermiculture composting systems. And it's a very cool thing to do. One of the advantages of vermiculture systems is that you are also getting the word worm castings, I think they're called, which is the skin as they shed their skin, also the poop and the urea from the worms can get collected, which forms a very good liquid compost. Another great thing you can do is if you're making your own compost would be not just taking that and introducing it into your garden, but making a compost tea out of the compost, that the living compost that you've just made, which can be literally, it's very similar to making tea. You're wrapping an amount of that compost up in some sort of a water permeable bag or a water permeable cloth, tying it up, putting it into a container. You can use like a large garbage pail, a 50-gallon garbage pail. You put a fish tank aerator, a bubbler, into that to keep everything moving. You add a little bit of food for the microorganisms, which would be strap molasses that you pour into the water media, and then you let it steep for a couple of days. And then you take that and you, depending on how strong it is, how much compost it is that you started with, you can use that as a really wonderful liquid fertilizer or foliar spray, for your, garden vegetables, your house plants, your fruit trees, your conventional trees, your ornamental flowers. And that foliar spray goes a really, really long way towards attracting beneficial insects and also just keeping the plants well fed and energized so that they are that much better able to protect themselves against any kind of unwelcome bacteria or fungus that might be trying to get in there and ruin your beautiful plants.
All right. Well, we're coming to a close, Dylan. You have any other closing thoughts for our audience? And you can talk about anything that you do, anything that you're passionate about that you think would be beneficial related to this conversation.
You know, basically just one of the things that I find a lot in my business is that lots of people want to have a vegetable garden, but they're nervous or afraid that they're going to mess it up. And that becomes a stumbling block for them to just take the step and get started. So if I was going to leave your listeners with any last piece of advice, it's this: you're not going to screw it up. Gardening it's a learning process. You might plant something in a spot one year, the next year you plant the same thing in the same spot and you get a completely different result. It's not an exact science. It is always something that, as much as we do love the product, organic vegetable gardening, composting, planting fruit trees, in my estimation, is more about the process than the product. Because that process bears results other than just those beans or those apples. Because like the overarching theme, I think, of what we've been discussing is that what we're really doing is we're becoming responsible citizens of our earth. We're becoming caretakers of this planet that we all share. It's our home. It's our mother. And we're caring for it. And that's really what sustainability is all about. It's not about the beautiful tomatoes or the beautiful pears that you get, although those are very nice. It's about changing the way that we think about stewardship of the planet as the real driving force of why it is that we make responsible, careful, mindful choices about the way we live our lives.
Yeah, indeed. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, we've been growing fruit trees. And my wife has said she previously didn't have a lot of contact with nature, but it certainly brings you closer to nature by connecting you with the processes. You have to be aware of the processes. You have to be aware of the sunshine and the water and the growing conditions and the surrounding trees and bushes and fungus and all that stuff. And so she said her appreciation of farmers and people who create food has grown enormously. Because previous to that, really, what do you think about farmers? They're out there growing food. It's a process. They do it and it happens and done. We don't have to think about it. When you're connected with it, it's very different.
And especially children. If your kids are out there and they're seeing that you're planting things and they're seeing that fruit grows on those things, they're gaining that insight. They're becoming connected with their food sources. And it's really becoming sort of like a you know, we use the word a closed loop local food system, where, you know, maybe, you know, clearly most of us cannot grow everything that we eat, but we can sort of make a point of going to the local farmers market. We can make a point of, you know, setting up a relationship with a CSA. We can have our own vegetable garden, and, you know, having a few of those different things in place, we can grow a couple of our own fruit trees. We can have a few berry bushes, and you put those things in place, and all of a sudden your kid's connection to their food changes, and they have sort of a more of a caring, I don't want to say ownership, but they're more connected. Like you just said, they're more connected with
more, much more connected.
And that's a huge step in, you know, raising responsible stewards for our world. And that's really, I think, what it's all about.
It's important. And Dylan, I will finally share with you that today I had a bite of a delicious peach.
Oh, great.
Yep. And that peach came off of one of our trees. And Dylan, you've helped us with our trees. So that's why I'm telling you. We're not getting a lot of peaches yet because they're young trees, but I did get one off the ground and half of it was good. And
Interestingly, I have some pear trees that are did great last year. This year, it's unbelievable. They're about 8 years old. And they are, I mean, there's got to be, I don't even know, 500 pears on the pear tree, and they're glorious. And I had today a Honeycrisp apple from one of my espaliered apple trees, which is a wonderful form to give to your fruit trees. And we could talk about espaliering fruit trees some other time.
Okay.
But look it up. It's a very cool introduction into any suburban landscape.
All right, great. And we've got blackberries, persimmons on their way, pears on their way, gojis, figs. You know, just it's a fruit farm out there. So thank you again, Dylan, for joining us. I really appreciate not just you joining us, but all the work that you've been doing for all these years and helping people to get enlightened about these issues.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
All right. And this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I've been speaking with Dylan Licopoli of the Home Organic Gardening Service, or HOGS, located in Northport, New York. HOGS does installation and maintenance of organic vegetable gardens and systems, as well as being committed to educating and celebrating a community of mindful gardeners on Long Island. You can find out more about them at www.hogsinc.com. That's hogsinc.com, or you can go to HomeOrganicGardeningService.com, HomeOrganicGardeningService.com. And that'll do it for this evening's show. I'll be with you again the same time on Friday, September 1st, and on the first and third Fridays of each month at 6 p.m. And when I'm not here, stay tuned to hear more excellent natural alternatives and the Healthy Planet programs with cutting-edge health and environmental social justice issues and more every Friday at this time. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, email us at info@healthyplanetusa.org. You can also visit our website at healthyplanetusa.org. Until next time, stay strong, relax. Make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Become an active participant for peace on our planet with your thoughts and actions and words. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. Consider making those treasured kitchen and yard waste into a valuable compost resource. And finally, remember to enjoy each and every moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night. It's the new Mother Nature taking over. She's getting us all. She's getting us all.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.